Now, I told you last week that we'd talk about our children's scholastic progress and also about their friendships. I decided I couldn't handle everything today, so we'll just major today on the schoolwork end of it and postpone the rest of it until next week. I'm going to read you something funny. It's after-dinner homework time in the Smith home. Notebook in hand, 12-year-old Roger plants himself in front of his father. "I'm stuck," he complains. "It says here to list the 10 countries that make up the Middle East, and I can only think of 3, Iran, Iraq, and Israel. I remember them because they all start with an I." "How about Egypt and Turkey?" Dad asks pleasantly, putting down the newspaper. Roger writes down the names of the 5 countries, chanting exuberantly, "Five down, 5 to go." "The Middle East," Dad murmurs, but the names of the other countries escape him. He feels annoyed with the teacher for asking such a hard question of a 12-year-old. Mother, listening as she knits, makes a suggestion. "Wouldn't the encyclopedia have all the countries listed?" "Sure," says Roger, reaching for the volume. As he reads the Middle East listing, his face clouds. "I don't get it," he exclaims. Dad takes the encyclopedia from his son. "Let's see. There are 3 definitions of the Middle East and 3 different lists of countries included in each. Which definition is your social studies teacher using?" "I don't know," Roger mutters. "Well, how is the poor boy supposed to know?" Mother asks. "I imagine the poor boy was told," Dad says sarcastically. Both parents turn to Roger as he shamefacedly admits that the information is in his social studies textbook, but he has forgotten to bring the book home. Mother, trying as usual to come to the rescue, suggests that Roger answer the question the next morning before school. "There won't be enough time," the boy screams. "We have to do a whole chart with the capitals and the climate and the crops, and we have to make it neat." "Too bad," says Dad, and his voice conveys a definite feeling that too often Roger counts on his father to get him out of a jam. "Our whole week's grade depends on this chart," wails Roger, now panicky. "Well, next time, start earlier," advises his father as he goes back to his newspaper. "And remember to bring home your book." Mother is angered by her husband's casual tone. "This is important," she snaps. "Well, what am I supposed to do?" he snaps back. "Well, you could help the child figure it out." "I'm no mind reader. I don't know which list the teacher wants." Mother looks at her watch and sees that it's 9:30. "Well, go to bed now, Roger. You'll just have to do the best you can in the morning." "How can I do a whole chart before school?" he asks angrily. "Oh, come on now, Roger. It's not Mother's fault you forgot your book," Dad says impatiently. "Go to bed." "Okay, if you want me to get an F," shouts Roger. The boy's hysteria is caught by his parents, who know that even one F will bring down his grade average, and that in junior high school, grades begin to count, and he'll never get into college if he keeps on like this. And now shall we have a few moments of desperate, quiet weeping? I don't know anything about homework, women. And if I weren't so sure that the long-range process that the Lord is doing in my home is going to come out all right because I'm going to keep my heart perfect before Him if it kills me and depend on Him for it, I wouldn't have a thing to say to you this morning. I have asked the Lord to help you and me as we sort out our thoughts about homework, and that's about all I have done this week, is to try to sort out what I'm really thinking about it and do it under His leadership. There was a time when parents were supposed to keep their hands off as far as homework is concerned. And if you have a child in the latter grades of high school now, you realize, you remember this time, don't you? Now, I have a child in the 11th grade, and I have one in the 7th grade. And when Donald was in the elementary grades, I was told to keep my hands off his homework. Don't you bother with his reading. Don't teach him to write. You let him alone. You'll mess up what we're doing here at school. When Deborah came along, suddenly the whole responsibility was shifted over to me as a parent. Well, you see that she knows it, you see. You help her with her homework and so on. Now, the reason for this is because in the last 10 years, the population has boomeranged to the point where our schools are so crowded and we have such a teacher shortage that a teacher cannot possibly give the child the individual attention he needs. She can simply throw the ideas at him in the classroom, and then it has to be up to the parent to help the child sort them out when he gets home. Some teachers have 50 children in their classrooms or more, I understand, in some of them. Now, how can you possibly give each little one the attention he needs in helping him understand what he needs to understand about the lesson? And personally, I think our teachers are doing a tremendous job under the difficulties they labor under today. Now, I hope that as we talk about it today, the Lord will take perhaps something I say and point you in your thinking in the right direction to your own difficulty with your child. I can't possibly give you an answer for every one of the homework problems represented here, except that what I just read pretty well sizes it up, doesn't it? I believe that there are two things that are necessary for a child to be able to perform adequately scholastically. One of them is ability, and the other is motivation. He has to be capable of doing the work that's required of him. If he's 8 years old, he has to be capable of doing work that is required of an 8-year-old child. And then he has to have a reason for doing that work. Now, if a child, let's talk about the ability first. If a child is making good progress in school, we don't usually worry about his ability too much, do we? But if he hits a snag and he's having difficulty in his work, well, then it's up to us as parents to begin to get to the basis of it, to the source of the trouble. And the first place I would look, if I were you, is here. To have a talk with the child's teacher or with the guidance counselor at school and get an understanding from them just what your child's basic ability is. And the teacher is usually a pretty good judge of this. Now, I say usually because once in a while you'll have a child that fools you. You'll think all through school that he doesn't have one brain rub against another, you see. And then somewhere along, you give him an IQ test and you find out he's got the highest IQ in the whole school. But he's been playing it stupid all the way along for other reasons. And we'll talk about that later in the lesson. But even in a case like this, the teacher can generally spot the fact that the child has the ability and isn't using it. Or he can spot the fact that the child is slow and just cannot keep up with the rest of the class. Now, once you understand what your child's ability is, you know just how far to push him, you see, what to expect from him. And the first piece of advice that I have to give you is this. Once you know what his ability is, accept it. If the teacher tells you that your child is in the low normal group, for instance, and he is never going to be able to go to college, in fact, he won't finish high school unless he takes vocational training of some kind, accept it. There are parents who have their hearts set on their children going to college, even when they're in the elementary grades. They've got it all planned. And when they come face to face with a situation like this, where suddenly they find out that the child is not going to be able to come through and complete their dreams for him, they simply will not face the fact, and they keep on pushing and prodding and urging and distractedly going here and there for help. Somebody, make him produce. And he can't. He doesn't have the ability to produce but just so much. How much happier this child would be if the parent could accept him just for what he is and let him move along at his own rate of progress and in the realm where he can, at his own rate of progress, he can produce. He can be productive on his level. But if he's pushed beyond it, he can't do anything. He becomes a nervous wreck. Now, pride is involved here, isn't it? It's difficult for us to accept as parents that our children are not geniuses, or genii, what's the plural of genius? Genii. We like to believe that our children are brilliant and adorable and smartest in the class and prettiest and so on. Well, they aren't always. And we somehow feel that it reflects on us, don't we? Naturally, my child has to be brilliant. Well, naturally, your child doesn't have to be brilliant. You really don't have anything to do with it. It does not reflect on you. I remember a family that I knew back in Indiana, a family of many children, and in the same family, the oldest boy was an absolute genius. He was. He was rated that. They were so poor that he couldn't afford to buy his school books. We had to buy our books then. And he borrowed books overnight and memorized what he needed and went through school that way, and he went through the university that way. And he is now a nuclear physicist and is one of the most respected men in the United States. He is an absolute genius. In the same family, the next girl has the mind of a 12-year-old. Now, she has the body of a woman, but she goes around forging checks and getting into all sorts of difficulties because her mind has never grown up. Then the next girl is a very brilliant girl. She's not a genius of any sort, but she's a very brilliant, intelligent girl and has made a very good life for herself and her family. The next boy is in low normal, and he just gets along. He doesn't keep out of trouble all the time because he hasn't had the right direction, but he just gets along. Then comes another girl who is just about average, and then comes a little one that's going to be very, very brilliant. You can see it already. Now, you explain that. Half the children brilliant and half of them, some of them average and some of them far, far below average. So, you really don't have anything to do with it, do you? And if you can get your pride out of the way and accept your child as the Lord accepts you for what you are and let him move at his own rate of progress, this is the first thing that will help you. Then the next piece of advice I would give you would be to get the proper perspective on his academic progress. It is not an end in itself. It is a means to an end. You remember our talking about polishing the arrow, you know, for God's use. And all that he does in school is not so that you can have a string of A's to look at. Oh, is he making A's? What's he doing? Is he making A's? No, this isn't the point. Is he progressing at the rate he should? Is he performing at the level he should? For a purpose. This is a means to the end God has for him. This is not an end in itself. Now, a child with a very high IQ, and when I say IQ, I use that term because I can't think of anything else to use. It's a pretty good measure of a child's ability, but it isn't an absolute measure. If your child has an IQ test and they tell you his IQ is so-and-so, well, you can know that it's about that. And that possibly it could be different under other circumstances. Or that possibly that is not precise within 5 to 10 points. But it's a pretty good measure of his ability. Well, suppose you have a child with a high IQ that is not producing at all in school. Well, then you get around to the other thing that he has to have, and this is motivation. A child has to have a reason for producing. I remember talking to a teenager, a very bright boy, who was suddenly failing in high school. And there was difficulty in the home, turmoil, a lot of it in the home. And I said to him, can you tell me why it is you're not able to do the work? And he looked at me trying to sort his words out, and his face was as bleak as a New England winter. He said, I suddenly didn't have any reason for doing it. Don't you have to have a reason? You do. You have to have a reason for producing. Now, there are many reasons that will motivate people to knock themselves out to succeed. Fame, popularity, the thought of getting a good education so you can get a good job and make a lot of money. It's a tough world today, a lot of competition. There are many reasons, but they won't hold up under stress. Do you remember, I've got so many magazine articles here today, I can't follow them. You remember I quoted to you from this report of the White House Conference on Children and Youth, some of the remarks that the young people said? And I would just remind you of some of their remarks. The indifference of our generation comes from parental indifference and devotion to things. We would be showing leadership for world peace, but we are not taking the initiative. This is from the young people now, from their mouth. Making financial success and pleasure major goals leads to emotional starvation. Good attitudes come from parents who care about their own children and show concern for others, too. Another child says, most students use college for self-centered enjoyment. The popularity of the slick job is waning. Working for others could put an end to loneliness. We're looking for something to give our lives to. If we had something worth working for, we wouldn't get so mixed up. Now, you see, there are all sorts of reasons for producing, but they don't hold up under stress. So we must hold our children to the very highest. We must give him the highest motivation. And you have been taught in the last three or four lessons what that motivation is. If you will think back through the lessons, our spiritual goal for the child, his need for love and discipline, what we want for this child, we must somehow give our children a vision of God's great purpose in the world and the fact that they are individually involved in it. What we've been talking about now for three or four weeks, we have to catch the child up in that vision, and he'll get it as we have the vision and impart it to him with our enthusiasm and our eagerness, looking forward to what the Lord is going to produce in this life. The child must know that he is individually important in God's purpose in the world, and that he is being prepared now in his school years. All that he does is preparation for God's ultimate purpose for him in the world, where God will use him and nobody else to do one particular thing that the Lord has cut out for him. And that his homework, his schoolwork, and all of it is a means to this end. And as he catches your enthusiasm, come on, get all you can, get all you can. Here's your opportunity. Get it while it's here. You're preparing yourself for what God wants you to do. Then he must understand that whatever abilities he has, God gave him, and he knew what he was doing when he did it. He must realize that if he has just an average intelligence, God gave him that for a purpose. If he has a low, normal, or if he even has a very low intelligence, God, for some purpose, gave that child the amount of ability he gave him. He gave the one with the high IQ that for a purpose. But God has different needs in the world, you see, for different people. And it was no mistake. When he did it, he knew it. And as you accept this gratefully from the Lord, enthusiastically from the Lord, God made you this way for a purpose. The child accepts his ability as from the Lord and looks forward eagerly to what the Lord is going to do with the ability he has given him. Now, if the child has this direction strongly enough in his life, it will override all his other difficulties. However, it's a rare child who has this sort of direction, especially in the elementary years. It's a rare child that has it in high school. We must direct the child toward a realization of this motive through the years, and there are other things that he has to have in order to be able to produce. He needs his parents' interest. Every child needs to perform and to be applauded for performing. Now, do you understand that? Do you think it's kind of sinful to pat your child on the back when he does well? You think, well, this isn't really teaching him to be a good, tough Christian. I want him to learn to just work solely for the Lord. Well, yes, of course you do. But in the meantime, he needs your approval. See, we all have to have love and understanding, don't we? And we have to be approved and accepted. And your child, in his formative years, as he grows up, needs to have your approval. And do you remember when Dr. Gedney was here, how he warned us as parents about always seeing the hole in the donut? And we do this, don't we, women? We ask the child to dust the living room. We don't come in and say, my, that looks beautiful. Say, there is a little spot you missed over here. We come in and we look around and say, well, you didn't get that over there. Always seeing the hole in the donut. He brings home a report card and there's an A and two B's and two C's and a D. What's this D doing here? We never start out with, oh, look at this wonderful A. Oh, and a good B and a couple of C's. Well, now, what's this old D doing down here? We don't do it that way, do we? We do it just backwards, always pointing out the hole in the donut. I remember another teenager who, as he went through high school and college, he had the ability to make straight A's. He had a father who loved him dearly, but he didn't believe in showing love. That was sissy stuff. That was weakling. He wanted his son to be a man. Don't ever show him that you love him. So, when he made a poor grade, the roof fell in. If he tried hard and he made an A, nothing was said. So what was the point? After a while, the child said, what's the use of trying? If I make A's, he never says anything. So he quit trying. Now, he was a Christian, and if he had known, if he had had direction in his life at that time in high school that said, well, never mind, you're doing this for the Lord's sake, he could have survived, you see. But he didn't have approval anywhere. Nobody told him that God approved of what he did. And he didn't get any approval from his parents or anyone else, so he gave up. The child has to have your approval for his performance. There must be the kind of loving interest that will take time with him. Now, lots of parents love their children and are interested, but they just simply don't want to be interrupted long enough. Their own schedule is so busy that they can't take the time out to be vitally interested in the child's homework and his schoolwork. To give him the enthusiastic outlook on it that you have, God loves you. God wants you for a purpose. Now, let me see what you're doing here. Let's see what God is shaping you for. Along with this sort of loving interest, the child has to have discipline. And we've talked about discipline, and if you wait until now, if you're going to start this lesson to discipline your child, and maybe he's in junior high, well, you're going to have difficulty. He should have been getting the discipline all along, you see, that will make his schoolwork come to him easily. But if you haven't seen this up to now, well, then now's the time to begin. And if I were you, I would sit down and have a talk with my child and explain to him God's purpose for him and why he must have discipline, why you must discipline him, and what the end result will be. And then crack down on him. Discipline him. We have a duty as parents not to allow our children to trifle with their tasks. Not to quit when they want to. Not to work below the level of their ability and produce mediocre work and be satisfied with it. The child needs the security of a parent who will say, I won't permit you to do a sloppy job. I remember another teenager who had indulgent parents who said nothing as he brought home grades far below the level of his ability. And then one day brought home a bad grade in math, and this sort of hit his father where he hurt because that was his specialty in school. He was good at math, and for a son to bring home a poor grade in math sort of hit him where it hurt, and he really chewed him out. You should have heard the child bragging to me about his father chewing him out for the math grade. Boy, he didn't like that. Boy, he really gave it to me. You should have heard him. He railed for an hour. And a pleased smile on his face. Well, why? I turned to my son and I said, you explain that to me. Why is he so pleased because his father's so upset with him about his math grade? And Don said, well, Mother, don't you know that we've got to know you care? We've got to know that you care whether we make poor grades or good grades. And if there's no reaction, well, he's pleased because his father cares, that's why. And this is true. Now, the next most important thing is that the child has to learn to discipline himself. Now, you can discipline him. You can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You can set him down there with the books and everything, and you can turn off the TV and say, now it's homework time. But you can't make him absorb it, can you? He has to discipline himself. And you teach the child to discipline himself by giving him responsibility as he grows up just as fast as he's able to accept it. And then, dear girls and Shirley, taking your hands off and letting him face the consequences of not meeting his responsibility. Now, we don't do this, do we? In that little portion that I read to you, this child here is going to make an F. And his whole 6 weeks grade will go down because of it. Now, will these parents hustle around and find this information for him so he has it in the morning? Will they figure out some way for him to get that chart produced in the morning? Or will they let him go to school and take the consequences of carelessly forgetting the book, of carelessly not listening to what the teacher said about which one he should use, and of not allowing himself the proper amount of time to do it? Now, which will they do? And you know, don't you? How many times do you scrounge around and dig up information for them at the last minute? Well, now, how can you help them learn to discipline themselves? I'll tell you a few ways that I am trying out at home. One is this responsibility for assignments. It used to be that homework time, Debbie would sit down to do the homework, and, well, I'm not sure about this. Can I call so-and-so and ask them? Every night. Well, can I call this about this assignment? Well, where were you when the teacher gave the assignment? Well, I'm not sure what she said. Well, this went on for a while. And, of course, you see, I'm over a barrel because she's hard of hearing. And I'm not sure if she did hear what the teacher said. See? So, poor thing, maybe she didn't hear. Well, let her call Danny. Let her call Danita. Let her call Sharon. So, finally, it came to the place where Dad and I had a little talk. And we decided, all right, now, Debbie, you see that you get the assignment. Period. If you don't get it, that's tough. If you don't know what to do when you sit down and do your homework, well, that's just too bad. Now, I make allowances for if she happened to be out of the room when the assignment was given, and I put her through the third degree to find out this is the truth, but they do send them out on errands, you know, take the milk money and so on. Was she out of the room when it was given? Did she really get it all except this hearing difficulty? And I can tell now because I know what she can hear and what she can't hear. See, I know which sound it is she can't hear, and I can look at it and see, well, she could have made a mistake there on that. If there is a really definite reason for calling another child about an assignment, she's allowed to do it. But it doesn't happen now very often, you see. Maybe once every month or so, she might have to call a child. She took the responsibility when I told her she didn't have any choice. To give the child the responsibility of bringing home the proper books, looking at the list of assignments, and bringing the books that go with that. And if he doesn't bring those books that go with that assignment, that's too bad. He can't call up so-and-so and say, read it to me from your book, or go borrow somebody's book. You just have to not have that homework in the morning. She brings them home. And then the responsibility for the child to do the homework. Now, Mr. Garrick tells me, oh, this is going to hurt you. He tells me that a child ought to be able to take the responsibility for their homework in the fourth grade. Isn't that awful? By that he means not that you shouldn't ever help him, not that at all, but the child ought to take the initiative. He ought to know that he has a certain time to do homework, and you shouldn't have to nag him into doing it. He should take the initiative for getting it done. This, ideally, is the situation in the fourth grade. Now, we can just wipe that off the board because none of us do. It's a rare child that does that. But then he gave us a little bit of grace. He said, absolutely, by the sixth grade, the child ought to be taking all the initiative for his homework. And they're not, are they? They're not. Now, maybe you got caught in this changeover situation and you didn't realize this the way I didn't, and you didn't realize what was coming along through the years, and the child really isn't able. He's in high school, and he really isn't able. He has to have help. But if you see the situation clearly, you can begin to work toward this end of making him assume the responsibility. If you just will not let your mother's softness get in the way, and just go quietly in the closet somewhere and chew your fingernails while he takes the responsibility for what he did or did not do. I want to quickly mention some things. We only have a few minutes, so I'll just mention these, and you think about them when you get your outlines. You apply them to your own situation. Some things that can be affecting the child's schoolwork. And perhaps if I just mention some of these and call them to your attention, you'll be able to fit it to your situation. A child may have deep-seated emotional difficulties. Now, they may be temporary anxieties. I remember when I was in the third grade, one of my little classmates died, and nobody bothered to explain to me. I heard vaguely some of the symptoms she had, and they were symptoms that could go to anything, you know, chicken pox, scarlet fever, anything else. But I thought I was going to die then, because if I had a headache or a tummy ache or was upset in any way, well, she was too, you know. Nobody realized my difficulty, and nobody bothered to explain to me what death was, nor why she had happened to die, nor that I was all right. I worried about that thing most of that year, until finally time took it out of my mind, you know. I can still remember her name, Vivian something. I can still see her face. It was that important to me at the time. I remember that I used to worry about my father marrying people. He's a preacher. And there'd be a wedding, you know. Well, Pop's going to marry so-and-so. This worried me to death. Somehow my mother seemed to have the edge over all these other women. He stayed with us. But he kept marrying all these women, you see. Now, that sounds silly, but I want you to know it worried me. I lay awake at night and worried about it. Well, one of these times, there might be one that he'd like better than Mom. Children have all these little anxieties that we go on our way, you know, we don't realize. But you can tell if your child's anxious, can't you? Then get to the root of it. It might be a fear of some impending event. Maybe you've mentioned to him casually, well, we're going to have your tonsils taken out this summer, in the spring or the fall. He'll worry about it for 6 months. It may be something else that he's looking forward to, some unpleasant thing like this that's in the future and he knows about it. And all he can think about is that. He sort of marks time until we get this thing over with. Then his emotional difficulties can be caused by strife in the home and tension. I can't talk about this. I'll sit down here and blubber in front of you. But if I could tell you, all the children I know that are limping along in school, they have the ability, but they can't. Their little nerves are in knots because of the strife and the tension in the home and the situations that they just are not able to cope with. They don't understand it. They don't know what to do about it. There isn't anything they can do about it. And in school, the added effort of doing schoolwork on top of all this turmoil is just too much, and so they give up. Then another seat of emotional difficulty is pushing the child beyond his ability to perform. It could be exactly the opposite, not pushing him up to his ability to perform. An exceptionally bright child may be bored, or he may be doing a mediocre job and waiting for you to say, come on, get with it, to give him that spur to do it. It can be lack of love and understanding on the part of the parents, the failure to show approval. It can be a struggle with temptation. Please mark this with your older children, your high school children, your junior high children. They have all sorts of struggles that go on in their minds in this time when their emotions are so in such an upheaval as they change. They go into adolescence. And they may be having a struggle with some sexual problem. They may be involved emotionally, so tied up emotionally with their infatuation for another boy or girl, you know, that this has them really upset. We call it puppy love and laugh, but it's not funny to them. Then the older child, the junior high, and the high school age child, the teenager, this is the time for spiritual upheaval in the life. This is the time of decision. And it can tear a child to pieces as he makes the decision that we talked about in the other lesson, standing at the two gates. Well, will I give in? Is it to be my will or God's will? And the death struggle is mighty hard before he dies to self and gives up to the Lord. Many, many times a spiritual struggle that a child can't talk about to you is very deep inside him will manifest itself in trivial ways. There'll be a big upset over something that you just shake your head about. Well, it doesn't even matter. What's it all about? Well, what it is all about is the deeper struggle inside, the spiritual struggle that's going on. His difficulties can be a lack of training and self-control and discipline. Can be a lack of discipline, teaching him to discipline himself. A lack of discipline to the parent. And then here is another great difficulty, a crowded schedule. Our children go at a clip that leaves me breathless to think about it. They don't have any time to just be children. Dream, play, do nothing, dilly-dally a little bit, the way you did when you were a child. They've got an appointment from 8 o'clock in the morning right through the day, like that. And they don't have time. And it's up to you as a parent. If you see, first of all, that his homework is too much for him. If there is too much, if all he does is homework, then it's up to you as a parent to go to that teacher and sit down and sort it out. And I did this in the 6th grade when Debbie was up over here with homework. And as I went and talked to Mr. Weatherby, we had an understanding. Finally, I knew what he wanted, what he expected of her. And I saw where she had misunderstood what he expected of her, and we got a nice, happy medium here. And we finally got things settled down. If he's trying to cope with too much else, if you're trying to give him music and sports and he's having difficulty in his homework and this club work and that club work, somehow you as a parent have got to put your foot down and sort out his schedule so that he has quiet nights at home during the week to study, so that he has time for recreation and relaxation. And I don't mean just lying in front of the TV. I mean time to get out in fresh air and have a well-rounded life. And if it means that he makes B's instead of A's, well, still, this is preferable in order to have the well-rounded life. Then, physical difficulties can be a source of his trouble. He may be having trouble with his hearing. Our daughter was in the 5th grade before I discovered she couldn't hear. She's hard of hearing. All this time, struggling, trying to learn to read. She can't hear what the teacher's saying, you see. Hearing, sight. Your child may be struggling to see what's on the board, struggling to see what's on his paper. He may have some glandular disturbance that makes him tired or makes him nervous. He may have, in rare cases, cerebral damage, some sort of slight damage to his brain when he was born or through some accident of some sort that would give him just enough difficulty to make him limp along all the time in his schoolwork. These are things that your doctor can help you with. And if your child is having real difficulty, I would suggest that you get a thorough physical checkup. And I know when I tell you that, your doctor laughs at you, doesn't he? Well, take him with a tie and say, listen to me. Help me. My child is having difficulty. Now, I want to give you a few points for help in the homework. And here's the most important part of this lesson. Your attitude is the most important thing in your child's homework. And you know that, don't you? In quietness and confidence shall be your strength, the stream of living water that flows from you to the child, leading your child by still waters in the green pastures of your peace in the Lord. And I know children that are failing in school because loving parents are so anxious and so tense over this homework situation that the child is just like this. He cannot perform. A relaxed, cheerful, optimistic attitude on your part. And I want to ask you something. Have you really and truly committed your child's homework to the Lord? Have you really taken it before him and said, now, Lord, you know what your purpose is for my child. You know what you want him fitted for. And you know that in my blindness, I'll never see it until it's done in years to come. And so you're going to have to guide me and give me your wisdom and discretion and teach me every step of the way what it is you want done for him. I'll do it so gladly if you just guide me. And then for that moment that we just read about, right then, dependence on him, at this moment, give me your wisdom. What shall I do? What is the thing right now that I should do that will achieve your end purpose for this child and shape him a little further along that road? And as you rest in the Lord, the child soaks up your peace, you see, and is able to go about his work relaxed at his best. Provide a place and a time for the homework. Now, maybe you have a child who likes to do it in the privacy of his room. Maybe you have one that likes the company of the family. He likes to sit at the kitchen table and have somebody sort of near, you know, while he does it. See that the TV's off. See that distractions are at a minimum. as much as you possibly can. If you have a big family of little children and things are in a hustle and bustle, then maybe you'll have to force him to go off in the room somewhere. And as soon as you've made a nice place for him to do it and given him a good desk and a good light and everything, well, he'll stand on his knees and his elbows in the middle of the floor and do it, won't he? So give up. I don't know what to tell you about that. I know it's bad for his posture, but that's the way they study best, like this. Teach him to be sure of his assignments. It helps if you give him a little assignment book to write them down in. Teach him that if he doesn't get them, they won't be gotten. Teach him to check the assignments for the books that he needs to take that day. Teach him not to put off doing the homework. On a weekend, for instance. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with the child doing homework on Sunday afternoon. We had a big discussion about this in our Sunday school class the other day. And some of the little girls felt it was wrong. Well, I can't say that. There might be a time when a child really had to do homework on Sunday afternoon. But I do think it's wrong for the child to put it off all weekend until Sunday afternoon and then just exhaust himself trying to do it. And, oh, it's time for church at night. Well, I can't go. I didn't finish my homework. Well, look, they go. If they've had all weekend to do it, they go. And in our household on Saturday, you don't see any comics on the television, you don't do anything else until you get the homework done, and then we go on from there. And I know a child doesn't like to do it, because Saturday is free. Now, I do make one rule, that Friday night is free. A child needs one night when he can come in and say, "Whee! No homework!" Doesn't he? So I let him have Friday night, then Saturday morning you got to buckle down again. Teach him to use a dictionary. Teach him how to use it, the mechanics of using a dictionary. He's supposed to learn this in school, but the teacher didn't have time, really, to show him. You teach him how to use it with great familiarity. When he's tired, give him a 5 or 10 minute break. Give him a glass of orange juice. Give him a cookie. Give him a drink of milk, something. Here, son, relax for a minute. 5, 10 minutes, and then go back for the clock. Teach him to do the hardest subjects first while he's fresh. He won't want to. You'll put him off to the last. Make him do the hardest subjects first. Teach him the principle behind problems, not the method. See? Why is this problem done this way? Well, because this is the basic principle behind it. Now, when you see another problem, you'll be able to go back to the basic principle and figure this one out. You may have to tutor him in basic fundamentals. This may be his big difficulty. He doesn't know his multiplication table. He may not even know his ABCs. He can't write, can he? And he can't read. What are you going to do? Now, he has to write easily, and he has to read easily in order to do his work. And as he goes on through high school, it's going to get worse and worse. You better deal with it now. Don't give up if your child can't write and read. If you can't afford a tutor to see that he learns these skills, then you make time somewhere in your busy schedule with the Lord's help to sit down and practice even 10 minutes a day with him, writing skills, even just the same paragraph over and over until he writes it freely, like this. This will improve his writing so much that you won't believe it. And your child can write better. Do you know that? Mr. Weatherby said to Debbie, "I'm sorry, I won't accept that. You'll have to write better." Well, you know she can write. I didn't know it. I couldn't read her writing up to that time. I couldn't make it out from heads or tails. And he said, "I'm sorry, I won't accept that. You'll have to write better than that." "Well, all right, if you say so." So she can. And it's that simple. He can do better if you see that he does. Point out to him how important it is for him to write well and easily. Point out how important it is for him to read. If he can't read, he can't understand math, he can't understand history, he can't understand anything. If he can't read and understand what he reads. Teach him his multiplication table until he knows it, all of it, the 12s and all, as fast as he says 2 times 2 is 4. Teach him number skills. Practice with him. Then teach him to draw on the Lord for strength. Teach your child this, even in the middle of the homework. But now let's get quiet before the Lord and ask the Lord's help on this. Teach him to quiet himself. In quietness and confidence, son, shall be your strength. Draw on the Lord for his wisdom. Well, we're over time, and I've got to stop. If you've got any more difficulties, I'm sorry. Go to Mr. Gary. That's the best I can do. Our Father, we realize that only through thy help will we rear these children and fit them for thy purpose. and we want to so badly, so give us thy wisdom. Give us thy peace. Let thy peace descend upon our households in this area of homework and the schoolwork. And help us somehow to convey to our children what we are learning here, that it is all for one end, that men might see Jesus Christ and know him and love him, and that they have an individual place in this scheme, and that they're vitally important to thee, every single child represented here, no matter what his ability, what his personality, what he's doing in school. You love him and you have a place for him in the world. Help us to depend on thee for the outcome, the long-range plan. For Jesus' sake, amen.